That timber cutter, Lemuel Clegg, and his boys were waiting for me when I got to the office. Hi, boys.
Cotton?
Yeah?
It's me. Open up. I sort of halfway knew what they would tell me even as DeGraff let me in. I motioned them three to follow and closed and locked the door behind me. The county hired Lem Clegg to build the gallows. He had a mill up in the forest out of Doubtful, where he cut posts and planks and such. I knew they were out there cutting timbers and squaring them up and getting plank lined up and such. And now, with a week left before the big event, I knew they'd be putting it up on the courthouse square, and we'd soon be seeing a proper gallows.
You met my boys? This here's Barter and the other's Wage. I give them names to set them in the right direction when they get growed up some.
Oh, I got a miserable name hung on me, too. I never did cotton to cotton, but I got stuck.
Sheriff, we got robbed. Highwaymen. We was driving the first of the timbers into Doubtful, and half a dozen masked men surrounded us, and all we saw was the muzzles of big revolvers.
What did they want?
Not my purse. They didn't even ask for my purse. It was the wood they wanted. They plumb stole every stick off our wagon, carried it over to their own, and sent us on our way.
You know who?
Sure I do. I'd recognize that blooded stock anywhere. That gang was Anchor Ranch, or I'll eat my shirt.
You say they were masked?
Yep, every last one. But if you put all of them Anchor Ranch men in a line, I'd be able to finger a bunch. I think I saw Spittin' Sam, Big Nose George, and Smiley Thistlewait. But I wouldn't want to make a bet on it.
What was the lumber?
The uprights, the crossbeam, four angle braces, and some tubifores to start framing the platform. I'd say $100 a good wood. I gotta tell you, Sheriff, we'd put our best into it. The uprights, they were 10-inch square posts of lodgepole pine, plain, smooth, and no knots. The crosspiece was a 10-inch square Colorado spruce, finest we could buy, full of resin to give it plenty of bounce. Why, you could drop a 400-pound fat lady from the Barnum and Bailey Circus from it, and it wouldn't even shiver. You could drop 100 people from that spruce, and it wouldn't hurt the spruce a bit. Why, you could drop 1,000, and it'd not show a sign of wear. When Lemuel Clegg builds something, he builds it to last a century. That's me. We'll build a gallows for that Puma County Square that'll last long after our grandchildren have come and gone. The county can put that gallows in a warehouse and bring her out and put her up any time, and it'll be as good as the day we built it. Yep, at least $100 of fine wood in there.
The good wood's not why they stole it.
No, I guess it ain't. Looks like we'll have to cut some more and get us an armed guard to bring it in.
Can you put up the gallows in time?
Suppose so. If we work night and day and we don't get any more wood stole from us. But it'll be cheaper wood. Lodgepole planes faster than spruce, so the whole thing will be lodgepole, which isn't the best wood for this sort of thing. A good gallows should be made to hang people for a century or two.
I know 100 or so fellers deserve a hanging. One long life gallows might save the county a pile of money.
Well, you can start with that fiend King Bragg. If he'd been out cutting trees like my boys, he wouldn't have gone bad.
I got more details, time and place, descriptions, anything that Lem and his boys could think of. There sure was some question whether Puma County would have a proper gallows up and ready for the day of the hanging. All right, you go cut some more wood, and next time let me know for you bring it in, and I'll make sure you've got a guard. They took off. DeGraff eyed me.
Going out to Admiral Bragg's place to pinch a few?
I'm thinking on it. I'm also thinking just to send them a message. King Bragg's gonna get his neck broke on the right day, even if there's no gallows. I'll hang him from the flagpole if that's what it takes, so they may as well cut it out.
Want me to go tell Admiral?
Yeah, do that. Tell him we're not waiting for a proper gallows. That boy's gonna hang, and that's the whole story.
All right, I'll ride. See you tomorrow, if they don't shoot me.
Or make a hostage of you. Keep a sharp eye out. DeGraff headed into the afternoon, and a little later I saw him ride up the road toward the Anchor Ranch. I went back into the cells to see about King, who was staring at the ceiling.
Anybody gonna feed me this week?
You didn't get fed?
Not since yesterday.
I'll get you some chow. It ain't right starving you.
In a week it won't make any difference.
I'm still trying to find out what happened in there. Tell me something. Did Mrs. Gladstone hear what Plug Parsons said to you?
She was right there.
And what did Plug tell you?
He said Crayfish was next door and wanted to see me and wanted to send a message to my father.
Crayfish was next door?
That's what Plug told me.
And was he in the Last Chance Saloon?
No, I didn't see him. So I just ordered a drink from Sammy Upward while I waited.
And where was Plug?
I guess he went to get Ruble.
And where were the ones that got killed? The Jonas Boys and Rocco?
Beats me. I had my back to the room and was facing the bar getting a drink.
And then?
Then I was on the floor, staring at the ceiling with Ruble and Plug standing over me.
With your gun in your hand?
No, in my holster. They took it out and told me every chamber was empty and I'd soon hang.
Why didn't your lawyer, Stokes, go into this?
What's there to go into?
All right, I'll go over to the cafe and get you a meal. You want something in particular?
What's this? My last supper?
I didn't feel much like answering. I locked up and headed down the street to Toadie's Beanery, where we sometimes got our chow for our prisoners. We had a regular account with Toadie, and he billed the county. He also kept some of our tin bowls on hand so he could dish up a meal real quick. Toadie was a one-eyed Civil War veteran, and he didn't wear a patch either. Beans was all he made. But some weeks, the beans would have bacon, and some weeks beef, and some weeks other stuff, like tomatoes, just for variety.
Well, I wondered when you'd come.
Toadie reached for one of them mess bowls and filled it.
You still have that boy in there? You feeding him somewhere else?
You mean he hasn't been fed?
Not this morning or last night.
Make it double, Toadie. The man ladled another round of beans and handed it to me. I took the bowl straight back to King Bragg, who accepted it with both hands like it was a communion plate. He sat on the bunk with the bowl in his lap and clasped his hands together.
I thank you, Lord, for these thy gifts. Amen.
He took the metal spoon I'd given him and dug in, and I noticed his face was wet with tears. And those tears just kept flowing and flowing down his cheeks, even as he downed the beans. It was so bad, I could hardly look. Judge Nippers was parked in his swivel chair, drunk as a skunk. So I rattled his shoulder some to fetch him awake.
What? What?
It's me. You up to talking?
I'm up to whatever the world throws at me. I am a sterling public servant and won't abide your insults.
You mind if I hang King Bragg from a cottonwood limb?
Mind? Of course I mind. The boy's gonna be hanged proper from a scaffold by the territory of Wyoming, just as fine and fitting as can be done. And no shortcuts. No tree limbs. This'll be done in a professional fashion.
There's a little problem. I told him about the Cleggs coming to town and getting their timber stolen.
Admiral Bragg's work.
The robbers were masked, and we can't prove it.
Well, it's perfectly obvious. You tell Admiral Bragg to cease and desist, or I'll hang him from the same gibbet after he watches his boy swing.
It may take the Cleggs a while to get that scaffold up if we keep running into trouble. It may not be ready in time.
Well, then I'll issue a brief stay. When it's up, I'll give the go-ahead.
And there may be a lot of delays. Depends on how much Admiral Bragg wants to slow it down.
Then spirit the young punk to Laramie. Armed guard, middle of the night. Let Laramie enjoy the hanging.
Our merchants won't be happy with that. They've already stocked up for crowds of people having a party. George Waller, he says most every merchant in town's laid in food and picnic stuff. There'll be people from all over Puma County coming in for the show, and they'll spend good money. If we move the hanging, you're going to have Mayor Waller and every merchant in town mad as hornets. It ain't just the merchants, either. I've already employed Doc Harrison to declare him dead. And Sammy Upward's advertising half-price drinks after the show and free hard-boiled eggs.
Well, tough beans. If I say spirit the prisoner out, you're going to spirit the prisoner out. If I say hang the bastard in Laramie, you're going to hang the bastard in Laramie. And if the merchants whine, I'll tell them to elect someone else next time. I'm tired of being a magistrate anyway.
Well, don't do that until I see whether we can get the scaffold up. I'm going out there and escort the Cleggs next time they're hauling wood.
Well, you do that.
I abandoned the Puma County Courthouse and headed back to my jail, only to run into Crayfish Ruble, standing right there with Plug Parsons at his side, grinning at me like he wanted to spill a little blood.
Hold up there, Sheriff.
I got no business with you.
We got word that the Cleggs got held up by Admiral Bragg's men, and they made off with the gallows timbers.
Where'd you hear that?
From old man Clegg. He was on his way out of Doubtful.
I'm on it, and it's not gonna happen again. I've sent a deputy to tell Admiral Bragg that ain't gonna stop a thing, and he's obstructing justice.
Fat lot of good that'll do. Here's the deal, Sheriff. We're going to escort Clegg and his boys and those timbers into town, and if Admiral Bragg's men try anything, they'll be leaking blood on the ground.
No, you won't. You're not gonna do that. I'm a peace officer, and I'm not gonna let a gang war start in Puma County. If you try that, I'll throw your ass in jail. Truth was, the odds were pretty bad. But I was the law, and I wasn't gonna let a bunch of gun slicks shoot it out. That evening, Barter Clegg slipped into Doubtful and told me his old man was ready to haul wood in the morning. He said they'd worked real hard out there and got the timbers ready and wanted to leave before dawn, figuring that they could get the timbers into town before anyone was up for the day. I told him I'd be there, and the kid slid away. I hope no one was looking, but in Doubtful these days, I never knew who was spying on me. I found Rusty and DeGraff inside. I'm going out to Clegg's lumber mill and escorting the wagon in. They've cut some new wood. We're driving back here before dawn. Now, you're going to take care of the prisoner, feed him, and do it proper. Because if he ain't fed and cared for, you're going to be looking for some other job.
Don't blame me.
I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just warning you that anyone fails to treat that boy proper, he'll answer to me.
I don't know why you bother when he's gonna be cold meat in 3 days.
He's gonna be taken care of proper until he hangs. I went to the gun cabinet and looked things over, and finally selected a double-barreled 12-gauge shotgun and some shells loaded with buckshot. The one I took with me had an 18-inch barrel, just right for making a good cone, but not so short it sprayed lead all over. I got up in the middle of the night when it was quiet and cold, and went to get Critter. He was dozing and had a fit, kicking his stall hard until I quieted him down. We're going for a night ride, so cut it out. He got the message and didn't even try to break my ribs by squeezing me into the wall. Pretty soon I got him saddled and bridled and led him into the quiet night. He sniffed the air and decided he was going to enjoy the trip. Lemuel Clegg's mill was about 2 hours away, so I started out there around 3 and rode in about 5. There was enough moon so I could make them out. They had a draft horse hooked to the wagon, and on the bed were 2 more uprights, a cross piece, and support timbers. They was loaded and ready, and we set out. None of them was armed, and that was good. I didn't want some amateurs getting themselves killed just because they was hauling metal. It sure was a nice night. I didn't try to talk none with the Cleggs because I wanted to listen to all the night sounds. But we made 2-3 miles without trouble until we come to a narrow place where the hills cramped the road some and there was room enough for the road and the dry gulch running alongside. I felt Critter tighten and could just make out his ears rotating off to the left some. I didn't wait for anything to unfold. I put my spurs to him and he bolted left so hard it pretty near pitched me off the saddle. And sure enough, there were 3 or 4 horsemen waiting up ahead. I pulled the shotgun and barreled right in, and by the time they got wind of me, I was on them. And I aimed one barrel at a knot of them. The shot must have caught men and horses too, because some of them nags was bucking and pitching their riders. I sure was curious to see who might show up in town wearing a few bandages. It only took that one shot. One rider picked up a downed rider, and the mess of them hightailed away. I had my shotgun at the ready, but that bunch was gone. I pulled the empty shell and reloaded and rode back. We'll likely have no more trouble. The old man whooped his draft horse to life, and we made our way into Doubtful. Them Cleggs unloaded the timbers on the courthouse square and took off for their mill. They needed to bring in another load of planks and 2x4s for the platform, and I worried about them getting ambushed on the second trip. But I couldn't be everywhere at once. A lot of people studied them big timbers, but no one touched anything. I thought the timbers would be safe enough there, out in front of the whole town. But the presence of those timbers changed everything. Doubtful would soon be a place where a big crowd would watch a criminal boy get hanged, and a sort of brooding settled over the town. Them timbers did it. The timbers made everything real. I kept an eye out for anyone with a bandage wandering around town, but no one like that showed up, and I knew that anyone injured by my buckshot was staying out at the Anchor Ranch and not coming in the Doubtful to get himself arrested by me. The Cleggs made another round trip, this time with a heap of planks and studs and a cask of tenpenny nails. They unloaded the whole shebang in the courthouse square and come over to the jailhouse to ask me just where to put up the gallows. I walked over there and had a look. It had to be in a place where everyone could see real clear that justice was done. I decided on a place fairly close to the Pima County Courthouse steps, so the crowd would gather down from the courthouse some. There sure were a mess of people around there, and I noticed the T-bar men were sort of guarding that pile of lumber. Crayfish Rubel was making sure that nothing stopped the hanging of the killer of his three ranch hands. It was a real quiet night, and the next morning the Cleggs were hard at work. They bolted the foot timbers to the uprights and then bolted in the angle pieces so that each upright stood on a base and wasn't going to tip none. Then, while them uprights were still lying on the grass, they bolted down a spruce crossbar, good and solid. And then the Cleggs got some big ropes and tied them to the crossbar and began to tug the whole thing up in the air so that by the end of the first day at work, they got the framework up and braced into place. It looked mighty solemn, and a lot of people stopped to stare at it. The merchants liked it because all them folks stayed right around town and went shopping. A few of the ladies bought spring bonnets they could wear for the hanging. I told the Cleggs they could sleep in the jail if they wanted, and I saw Lemuel talk a little with Wage and Barter, and then they turned me down without saying why. But I knew why. They didn't want to bunk in any cell next to the condemned boy. So they drove out to their place at night and planned to come back in the morning. If they stayed on schedule, they would frame the platform tomorrow and put in the hardware and spend the last day before the hanging testing it to make sure there was a good drop once I pulled the lever. I wanted a good drop for the boy, too, so he didn't just dangle there and choke to death real slow. I didn't know nothing about making a noose, but DeGraff said he did, so I was going to leave that to my deputy. I went over to Waller's Hardware and bought 20 yards of 1-inch hemp rope, tough rope that wouldn't bust when it took some weight, and I told DeGraff to make a noose, and we'd get her up there as soon as the Cleggs were ready. Things were coming right along all right. Lem Clegg and his boys was putting up the gallows in fine style, taking real pride in their work. I kept an eye on them, but no one was bothering them none. They'd got the hanging part of it up, good and solid, and now they was working on the platform and the trap. They'd put in posts and stringers, and soon they'd be running plank across. They sure knew what they were doing, and I wondered if they'd built a few other gallows in their day. It felt real good to have some professionals doing the job. There was a mess of people watching them work, most all the time. A lot of doubtful mothers, they'd bring their young ones over for a look and tell them kids to behave themselves or they'd get themselves hanged just like King Bragg was going to in a couple of days. Some of these boys, they got real excited by it and wanted to get real close to see it when the moment came along. Mrs. Cadbury, the school marm, she brought the fifth grade over to see the gallows going up and told them all how it would work. Them little kids were impressed, and I thought they'd stick to the straight and narrow rather than get their necks broken. When she came back with the seventh graders, they all begged her to watch it when the time came, and she promised that she'd let them out of school so they could see justice done and take part in the hanging of a mass murderer. I thought that was pretty good myself, and it'd keep the peace around there real good. The more people saw King hang, the better, when it came to stopping crime in his tracks. She told me it was better than reading the Bible to him every morning, and since the gallows had started to go up, she'd had no trouble in class and not even much truancy. So that gallows was sending a message all right. The more that came to the hanging, the better off Pima County would be. And of course, the merchants were expecting a big day in their shops, too. There was a mess of T-bar men floating around, but the Anchor Ranch outfit was staying away. That suited me fine. Crayfish Rubel was whiling away his days over at Rosie's, and I hardly saw him. But I knew he was around, and I knew he was pulling strings. His gun slicks were all over town, almost patrolling it, like they were the lawmen and not me. But it was peaceful enough, and as long as they didn't bust any laws or cause trouble, I had no reason to mind. Maybe it was even to the good, because it kept Admiral Bragg and his bunch out of Doubtful so the hanging could go ahead real peaceful. After watching the Cleggs saw planks and hammer them down, I headed out Wyoming Street thinking to have a visit with Sammy Upward. He might still be mad at me, but I didn't care. I was as itchy as ever about what was going on in my town. The moment I walked in there, Sammy started rubbing the bar with his rag, and I knew I wasn't very welcome. There was a bunch of T-bar men in there, and it was like I'd walked into their private club and they didn't like it none. Sammy just slapped a bottle of Red Eye on the bar and a tumbler.
That'll be a quarter. I'm charging one bit now.
It had been a dime. I didn't object and laid out two bits. I'm looking for a few things.
Oh, you got something to tell me first?
Sure. Admiral Bragg tried to stop the scaffold going up. I put some buckshot into the ambush.
That's so? You know who took some shot?
Nope. Anyone that's got hit staying out at the Anchor Ranch. I'll pinch anyone with a bandage on him just now.
Well?
I peered around a little. All them T-bar men had quit their talking and were listening to me. They wanted to know what the sheriff was asking about. So I decided to give them an earful. This fellow, Rocco, the one that King Bragg shot, I'm just curious about him. I got some flyers on the two brothers, so I know they were up to no good. But I don't know a thing about Rocco. Crayfish hired him, and he didn't seem like one of the regular bunch out there. You gonna help me with that?
Well, what do you want to know for?
I was sort of wondering if maybe King Bragg did the world a favor.
He didn't do the world any favor. Rocco, he was different, all right. He wasn't a regular cowboy living in the bunkhouse like the rest. He lived up at the house like Mr. Ruble. He's Mr. Ruble's manservant. You know, the gent that kept the big house, got whatever crayfish needed, took care of things. And Mr. Ruble, he has no woman, you know. So he had this Eastern gent, Rocco, do all that stuff.
What stuff? Sammy eyed the silent crowd and then leaned forward.
Crayfish Ruble sure liked his women, and once in a while he'd send Rocco to town with the black buggy to fetch him a woman. Rocco go rent one from one of the parlor houses, and he'd go to Rosie, rent one for a week, and bring her out to the ranch so Crayfish could enjoy her for a few days.
Then he'd take her back?
I only know what I heard, and that's all I'm telling you.
Rocco, did he spend much time with the rest of the T-bar men?
No, he was a loner. He was real well educated, talked different. You know, he never talked about cattle or guns or anything like that. When he came in here with Crayfish, he'd talk about good wines or how to cook venison or what women in Paris were wearing.
Rocco was from where?
How should I know? But once I served a man from that hellhole called Brooklyn, and this Rocco, he sounded like that. I couldn't place it if I tried, but he was smart.
And Crayfish employed him as a manservant? Anything else?
Maybe an informer. I think he was Crayfish's eyes and ears. Now that's all I'm gonna say. I'm done. I told you more than you told me.
Sammy stalked off to serve one of the T-bar cowboys who was wanting another shot. I just waited real quiet. I wasn't done with him. Pretty soon I had another crack at it. How come King Bragg shot him?
I don't know or care. King Bragg shot Mr. Ruble's best friend and two of his best hands in cold blood. A Crayfish Ruble told me a dozen times Rocco was the most valuable help he had. And them Jonas boys, they was harder working than most everyone in the bunkhouse. I'm gonna tell you something, Cotton. When that boy killed three of his best men, well, Crayfish broke down and pretty near cried some. He'd hate me for saying it because men don't shed tears. But I saw Ruble kneel over those three murdered men, and he fought back a tear or two, not wanting anyone to see how bad he felt.
Were they baiting King?
No, it was cold-blooded murder, an execution if you ask me.
The kid simply pulled his gun and shot the three of them?
He did. They was all in a row next to him when he was sucking Red Eye, and next I knew there was all this gunfire, and I was in the storeroom. So when I stuck my head out for a peek, there they were. Three dead men on my sawdust, leaking blood, coughing their last. Oh, man, Sheriff, that was a bad moment.
Huh. Must have been. One of them T-bar men came up to me. It was Carter Bell. He had witnessed the shooting and testified at the trial. So he was still around town. Carter Bell had a real nice sounding name, but he reminded me of a rodent with that rat face on a skinny body.
That hanging gonna happen like it should, Sheriff?
Everything's going just as the court directed.
Well, if it ain't, there's gonna be hanging anyway.
You planning on doing it?
Count on it, Sheriff.
You got the itch to string up the boy, do you?
I got that itch so bad, I'd like to bust in there and do it all by my lonesome before anyone else had the chance, Sheriff.
How come? What did the boy do to you?
He killed 3 T-bar men in cold blood, and I saw it.
I guess you and Plug Parsons were the two that saw it happen, with Sammy here.
If you don't hang that punk proper, watch your back, Sheriff.
Well, my ma, she always said I needed an eye in the back of my head.
You ain't hearing me. I saw the rag boys shoot our friends deader than buzzard bait. The court settled it weeks ago, so drop it now. Damn you. You gonna quit sniffing around or not? Answer me, damn it.
Bell, cut it out.
Just because you're wearing a star don't mean you're bulletproof.
Thanks, Sammy.
Don't you thank me. He's right. Quit sniffing around. Get on with the hanging.
I got out of there and wondered whether to go visit Rosie. But hell, Rosie's place was full of them T-bar boys and Crayfish himself. So I thought maybe I'd go talk to Big Lulu, who ran the Home Comfort, where one could hire several temporary wives. Big Lulu was a rival of Rosie and half a block away, but Lulu had a different clientele. Mostly shopkeepers, bankers, tent preachers, traveling salesmen, piano tuners, and folks like that who wanted all the comforts of home, especially when there weren't any comforts of home available to those fellers. And Crayfish was there as often as he was at Rosie's, singing fine old hymns around the parlor organ, joking with one of them wives that made the gents comfy, or taking tea and crumpets in the parlor with a few of the gals. I had in mind a little conversation about Rocco. Big Lulu's sure was a nice place, with a homey parlor where lots of swell folks gathered. I went in there and felt right at home. Big Lulu herself was sitting in the parlor, wearing a gray wrapper with purple petunias on it, just like my ma's. She was a little on the plump and curvy side, but lots of fellers preferred that to skinny and bony. She had horsehair sofas and chairs in there, and ivory lace curtains, and some Brussels carpets on the plank floor, so it was all fixed up good.
You want something, Sheriff? Or shouldn't I ask?
Well, yes, I'd like to talk with you private.
Well, that's $5, same as everybody.
No, I mean talk with you about stuff.
Boy, my mouth isn't where the action is, so I'd want $6.
No, I mean just ask questions.
I get schoolboys in here all the time asking questions.
All right, I'll just ask them right here in the parlor.
I charge extra for public performances, Sheriff.
You know Rocco, the one that King Bragg shot?
Do I know him? Did I know Rocco? Ooh, I knew him from top to bottom.
What I want to know is, did he rent some of your nice girls for Crayfish Ruble?
He rented them, but didn't return them. He always said they decided to catch the stagecoach to Denver, and Crayfish paid for the tickets. I lost a couple of my best temporaries that way. He come in and offer me $35 a week plus board to rent a lady so I didn't have to feed anyone, and I thought Crayfish was cheap, but who was I to complain? Long as he fed the girls, that was fine with me.
So Rocco would rent girls for Crayfish and sometimes not bring them back?
Is that news to you?
Yep, it's news. What did you think of Rocco?
Woo woo.
Do you miss him?
Honey, he was my favorite gentleman.
You got any idea why King Bragg killed him?
Oh, I never believed the Bragg boy did it. Honey, I got customers. I gotta go now. Unless you want to join our special Tuesday half-price happy hour, including drinks and ladies.
No. I'm heading for the square. I got out into the sunlight. Truth is, I was glad to get out of there. I was about ready to suffocate in there. So I enjoyed lots of fresh springtime air on my way back to the courthouse square where the gallows was going up. When I got there, it looked pretty near done, and the Cleggs was just winding things up with a little stair they'd built that would take me and the prisoner up to that platform. There sure was a bunch of spectators. Some young mamas was holding their little tykes up so they could see the gallows and telling the little fellers to behave themselves. Lem Clegg spotted me and came on over.
You're just in time, Sheriff. We got to put up the noose and test the whole shebang. You say your deputy can tie the knot?
DeGraff, yep, he says he can.
And I need some canvas bags and some rocks. How much does that boy weigh?
Oh, maybe 120, 30.
Well, we'll test it out with some canvas bags with that much stone in them. Make sure everything works. We wouldn't want anything to go wrong now, would we?
No, sir, I ain't counting on it.
Well, you get the noose and we'll fill some sacks with rock.
Alphonse Smythe, the postmaster, spoke up.
I've got some canvas bags, good stout mail bags.
That'll work.
Smythe hightailed it to the post office to fetch a couple of them bags. A bag full of rocks should test her out all right. I'll get DeGraff and the rope. I found both in the office. You got to make Clegg a noose now.
I could do that. I've made a few.
We got the hemp rope and headed back there. DeGraff, he knew what he was up to, and it made me wonder some about how he'd spent his earlier years. He laid out the rope on the platform and made a sort of end with one end of it. I sure didn't know how that would get turned into a noose, but he went right ahead with the loose end, and pretty quick he was making them coils, six in all, and then tied it up. It was a noose, all right. I thought them nooses had 13 coils.
Oh, that's just a superstition. They'd be too hard to handle. Six coils is about right. Coils keep the rope from going in reverse. Once she tightens, it's real hard to pull it loose. That makes sure the condemned gets strangled good and proper. That rope just slams the air pipe shut. The knot is always put a little to the left, and that snaps the neck. Some say the knot itself does it, but I think it's just the twist, it being off-center, does it. Anyway, done right, the condemned is totally ruined. Not a twitch. Except they soil their britches.
He fetched a ladder and climbed up to the crossbar and slung the rope over it.
Now that boy is about 5'7" or 8", right?
I guess that's right.
Now fix it for a 4-foot drop. That's enough. Too long a drop and it pulls the head clear off. That's not being respectful of the deceased, even though the spectators like to see it. You get a hanging where the head comes off and them school children talk about it for a week. So a shorter drop, that's better. Too short, though, and it doesn't snap the neck. So it's got to be done just right.
We don't need the mailbags. My boy Barter, he's the same size as King Bragg, and he can just step in here.
You sure you know what's what?
Oh, sure. Barter, you fetch yourself up here and stand right on that trap there. Right smack in the middle.
The boy, a grinning fool, just hopped up there and stood on that trap.
Now, Sheriff, this here trap will drop when you pull that lever over there. It's nothing but a stick on a pivot, but when that stick clears, the old trap will drop right smart. Go pull her slow and steady.
But your boy's standing on it.
He's not connected to a rope. Just pull her.
Are you set, Barter?
Good as gold.
All right, then. I yanked the stick, and sure enough, the trap swung down and the boy dropped straight through that hole in the deck. And...
whoa!
Landed in a heap on the new green grass of the courthouse square. He got himself up.
All right. I'll push that trap up and swing the lever back. It sure works good. That kid of mine dropped like a ton of bricks.
He put the trap up and the lever in place and ducked out from under the platform.
All right, Barter. You stand here on the trap and let Deputy DeGraff fit the noose to you. You and the condemned is just about a perfect match.
The boy stepped out on the trap, and DeGraff was about to drop that big old noose over his head, but I didn't like it. Whoa up. Barter, boy, you get off that trap. The deputy can fix you out with a noose without you standing there.
Nobody's pulling any levers. I ain't afraid.
Well, I am. I guess he took me serious because he did step back off that trap onto solid platform, and DeGraff dropped that noose over his neck and then began adjusting the length of the rope from the crosspiece. He had simply wrapped the rope 3 or 4 times from the crosspiece, and now he pulled the coils tighter until he'd taken some of the slack out. He left 2 or 3 feet of slack in there, so I'd have some wiggle room when I laid that noose over King Bragg. But pretty soon he had it all rigged up, and the rope tied down tight on the crosspiece.
All right, Barter, you can pull that thing off now. And let that be a lesson to you. Make an honest living, and you'll never wear a necktie.
Barter smiled like some fool and did a little jig, dancing real close to the trap, and then doffed the noose. It sort of swung there in the wind, twisting and turning with the spring breezes. I thought it was a mighty fine job. That's when Smythe returned with a couple of mail sacks. I guess we won't be needing them, Alphonse.
Oh, I was hoping to see one drop.
Well, if you want to see a mailbag drop, we'll just do her. We hunted around for some rock. There wasn't much on the square, but a bunch of fellas did come up with a few dozen stones after scouting things out, and we filled the mailbag and drew the string shut. Weighs a good 100 pounds, Alphonse. The postmaster eagerly dragged the bag onto the trap and centered it precisely. You want to pull that lever, Alphonse?
Sure do. I'll send the U.S. mail to eternity.
By now, there was some crowd, all right, taking it all in. I seen some rotten boys grinning like they was having the time of their lives. There were half a dozen ladies, too, in summer bonnets and straw hats. Now, this here's serious business. We're making sure justice is done, so you mind your manners. Them brats just grinned at me. Smythe took hold of the lever and looked around real solemn. He was pretending that the mailbag full of rocks was the real thing. He stared at the rocks, and then at everyone hanging around there. And then slowly, majestically, he inched that lever along until suddenly that trap dropped and that bag of rocks hit the turf. He grinned.
Now it's my turn.
No, it ain't your turn.
How come?
'Cause you ain't old enough, and it's none of your business.
I'm almost as old as you are.
I ignored him. Smythe, he dragged his mailbag out from under the platform and began doling out rocks to that pack of boys.
Now you put these back where you got them.
I'm keeping mine for a souvenir.
This show's over. It wasn't just them boys I was talking to. It was half the town of Doubtful, seemed like. Pretty soon they all drifted off, except for a few fellers who thought they knew everything and were pointing at the noose or at the gallows or at the platform and the trap, sharing all that stuff they had in their heads with anyone in sight. DeGraff picked up the spare rope and carried it to the sheriff's office, and the Cleggs cleaned up their stuff and left, and then I was alone on the square with that dangling noose and wondering whether what was going to happen in a couple of days could be called justice at all or a mistake. Things was real quiet. No one was trying to bust into the jail to hang the boy or to bust him out. I told DeGraff to keep a sharp eye out anyway. I got 2 more days to guard him, and then it'll be over.
Over for the kid, that's for sure.
My deputies had done a good job. They'd worked long hours, night and day. They were forted up and ready for trouble. And I made sure the prisoner got fed and cared for, which was something I plain insisted on after I found them fellers were ignoring the boy's needs. Still, I sure wished it was over. I didn't like the tension in town, like a ticking bomb, with all them T-bar men of Rubles running around, drinking too much and scaring the people half to death. They was all armed, some of them with 2 guns, as if they were just itching for trouble. But it wasn't illegal for them to carry, so they did. I unlocked the jail door and went in there to King Bragg's cell and found him staring at the ceiling. He barely acknowledged that I was standing there. I guess when a feller knows he's gonna get hanged in 48 hours or so, he's got a lot on his mind. You all right? He stared at me as if that was the dumbest question ever asked. A lot of people stare at me like that. My ma used to say you could learn more from the way people looked at you than what they were saying. Tell me again how it happened you went into the Last Chance that day. Tell me, boy. I want to know.
I went in because I was stupid. All it cost me was my life.
Well, just so I know, what did happen?
There's a record in the courthouse. I was tried, remember?
I want you to tell it, King.
Why?
Just tell it.
I went in there, the sampling room, because that's where all the anchormen go and that's where we're welcome. I got a drink from Mrs. Gladstone. She always said I was too young for hard liquor, so she'd give me a draft beer, like I wasn't grown up yet.
You were wearing your sidearm?
Of course. My father gave it to me. I practiced until I was good. I burnt more powder than anyone in the valley. It was for the Anchor Ranch, for my father. We had the oldest and best place, and we're not going to let someone like Crayfish Ruble drive us out.
There was more to it, wasn't there?
I wanted to be top dog.
That was a dream, wasn't it? Being the fastest gun, the one no one could ever beat.
Stupid dream.
So she poured some suds for you, and you were sipping real quiet, and then Plug Parsons come in.
Yeah, he walked in. He spotted me right off. Said he'd been looking for me all afternoon. Mrs. Gladstone told me Plug had been checking every few minutes to see if I was around town. The T-Bar outfit wanted to talk to me or something.
What did Plug do?
He's a big man, sort of all chest and shoulders, with a neck as thick as a gatepost. He came over, looked me up and down, and said, "Kid, if you think you're man enough, come next door. Talk to Crayfish."
That all?
That's all.
You followed him out?
No. He left. I finished my beer. I checked my loads and made sure my holster was loose. Then I went over to the Last Chance. There were a bunch in there, and they were waiting for the son of Admiral Bragg to walk through the door.
Who?
Who cares now?
I care.
I looked around pretty close. If they were going to rag me, I wanted to know who I was up against. They were looking for trouble, and I'd give them that. That's why I lived so long.
And there was Upward behind the bar, and Plug Parsons, right?
And Crayfish, and Carter Bell, and those three I guess I killed. Rocco and Foxy Jonas and Weasel Jonas.
I count seven, unless I got more fingers than I thought. But in the trial, Upward said he didn't see nothing because he was in the storeroom. Plug Parsons and Carter Bell, they were the witnesses against you. What happened to Crayfish himself? He was there?
Yes, sort of licking his chops.
You ordered a drink?
Red Eye. That's a man's drink. Mrs. Gladstone had gotten to me, serving me beer, so I ordered some fire water.
Then what?
Someone hit me. That's all I know. I woke up in the sawdust with an empty gun.
You have a bump on your head when someone hit you?
No, I don't remember. I had a headache.
Where'd you get hit? The boy just shrugged and turned away. Kid, I'm gonna look into some things. You get some rest now.
I'll get more rest than I want in a few hours.
I left him, staring into the low ceiling, and headed out. Crayfish had been there. That didn't come up at the trial. Crayfish Ruble was there with Plug Parsons and them two brothers that was Maverick and Cavs and Rocco, who was sort of pimping for Ruble and maybe stirring his own pot a little. And they goaded the poor kid into going in there. Doubtful was a different town now that the gallows was up and a noose was twirling in the breeze. People no longer stopped to stare at it, but hurried past, not wanting to see it. All the brats that hung around there had vanished, and the only person I saw was a poor old grandma in black, sitting on a bench and staring up at that noose. I headed for the Last Chance Saloon, but Sammy Upward hadn't opened up yet. It was still morning, and none of the joints on Saloon Row had opened up. I rattled the door, but no one came along. I walked around to the back door on the alley, and that was open. I walked right into that place. Sammy! But Upward wasn't around. Maybe I was trespassing, but I didn't let it worry me none. There was a whole book of laws I was supposed to know, but I never could get them figured out, so I just ignored them and did what needed doing. What needed doing this time was a real careful search. I wanted to know if there were bullet holes in the walls and where the bullets came from. If the Bragg boy had pulled his revolver while standing at the bar, he'd have shot away from the bar, or at least along it. So I kept looking around for holes in the wood, and I found a few. That T-bar bunch cut loose now and then, so there was holes every which way. It didn't do me no good to try to pick out the ones that the Bragg boy put there. The other thing I wanted to see was what Upward saw when he was hiding from all the lead flying around after King Bragg started pulling the trigger. So I got over to the storeroom and looked out at where Bragg was standing and at the rest of the place. And then I stepped back, just as Sammy Upward would have ducked, when them six guns started spitting lead pills. I also wanted to see what Upward kept under the bar. He had a sawed-off double-barreled shotgun resting there, a billy club, and way back in a dark corner, a little blue glass bottle with an eyedropper top on it. I reached for that, since I'd never seen the like. It didn't have any label on it, but it was a blue bottle just like the pharmacist used, and there wasn't a thing that was telling me what it was. I got real curious about that bottle and slid her into my pocket. I thought I'd see what was in there and maybe try it out. Maybe Upward had the measles or something and needed a dose of laudanum or whatever they get for measles or mumps or the pox. It fit into my pocket. If Sammy Upward was missing his medicine, he'd probably start asking his customers who done it. And meanwhile, I'd find out what I could about the stuff. I sure didn't learn much of anything in there. I didn't see any bullet holes in the bar itself, like maybe someone was shooting at Sammy. Maybe no one shot at Sammy because of his scattergun down there. He sure had a way of keeping order in the Last Chance Saloon. Anyway, I nipped that blue bottle, figuring I could get it back in there about as easily as I took it out, if I came early enough. So I slid back into the alley. It was quiet back there, and now there wasn't a soul anywhere. That suited me fine. I eased out to Wyoming Street and headed straight toward the square, with that big gallows sitting there waiting to be put to good use. The Cleggs sure done it right. Them uprights was straight and true, and the crossbar just laid flat up there and supported that rope. But I turned off to get to the sheriff's office and jail, and passed by a couple of T-bar riders lounging there, making sure Crayfish knew everyone that went in or came out. It wasn't illegal for them to sit there, but I didn't like it. DeGraff opened up and let me in, and I was glad because he was the one I wanted to talk to. He sure knew a lot of stuff. He'd been a crook once, but went straight, and there wasn't nothing better for a deputy than someone who knew how all that stuff worked. That was a lot more than I knew. I pulled the blue bottle out of my shirt pocket and handed it to him. He looked it over, noting there was no label on it. I got a riddle for you. What's that stuff?
Beats me.
I got to tell you I lifted it out of the Last Chance, and if it's nothing, I got to return it.
You stole it?
Well, I sort of borrowed her. It was down under Sammy Upward's bar, hidden in a corner near a scattergun, way out of sight.
That makes it real interesting. A little blue bottle hidden under a bar. I'm not sure. We'll have to try it out.
Try what?
Knockout drops. Chloral hydrate. About 2 drops of this stuff in someone's drink and he's flat on his ass.
Like being hit over the head?
Sort of. It'll drop you like you was pole-axed. Sip it, and bam, you're down for a while. And you don't know what end is up until it wears off. This is Sammy's?
He's the only one tending bar there.
I could be wrong. Could be laudanum or something like that. Painkiller. Women buy laudanum in blue bottles and put a couple of drops in water or tea to sleep good.
Maybe that's all it is. I wouldn't know a drug from a dog turd.
We'll find out.
Don't you go killing any dogs.
I like cats myself. Cats clean the rats out of my cabin. But I won't try this on dogs. I got a better idea.
You're making me itchy, DeGraff. He had a quart bottle of sarsaparilla sitting on the desk. He went to the door and found them 2 T-bar riders sitting on the steps taking the sun.
You boys want some sarsaparilla? You're looking hot. And it's a long time until King Bragg swings from that rope.
Don't mind if I do.
Sounds fine to me. Crayfish posted us here and we gotta stay. Sometimes I think I'll resign and take some other job.
I'll bring some out. Can't let you in.
He found a couple of cloudy tumblers that hadn't been washed since Noah built his ark, and poured a little sarsaparilla in each, and then unscrewed the eyedropper and put 2 drops of that stuff in each tumbler and swirled it a little. Then he added a little more sarsaparilla until he had himself the cocktail he wanted. You sure that's the right amount?
I've done this a few times.
You sure have to wonder about a deputy like that. He took them 2 tumblers out the door and handed one to each of them riders, and they each took a good swaller. And another. Nothing happened. They just sat there for a little bit, sipping the sarsaparilla until they both tumbled over like 10 pins getting hit with a ball. You sure they're alive?
It's chloral hydrate.
I couldn't even pronounce it, but it sure worked real good. Judge Nippers was parked at his desk, soaking up spirits, which he sucked from a little flask he held tenderly in one beefy hand.
You come to beg off? Forget it. Hang the bastard.
Well, I think we shouldn't, or at least until we get it looked at some more.
I knew it. You're gonna give me some sort of flapdoodle excuse.
Well, sir, I don't think the kid done it. And until we find out, I'd like to put off the big event.
You got evidence?
Sort of. Enough to put her on hold a little.
Do you know what evidence is?
Well, sir, it's facts, I imagine.
Relevant facts. That's good. I never would have thought you had it in you. So you want me to stay the execution? Why?
Well, I don't think he's the right feller, Your Honor. Here's what I think. The T-Bar Bunch lured him over there to the last chance, and the barkeep, Sammy Upward, he fed the kid some knockout drops. And then someone there pulled King Bragg's revolver and shot them three crooks and put the gun back into King's hand when he woke up, and everyone testified he done it.
That's so? That's the evidence?
Well, we tried out the bottle of knockout drops, DeGraff did. We knocked out the two T-Bar men.
And, where did you get this delicious concoction?
I was poking around under Sammy Upward's bar.
Without a search warrant.
I heard of them things once or twice.
Well, I'm glad you're educated, Sheriff Pickens. Now, where's the evidence?
This is it, sir. I gave Nippers the bottle.
The ordeal the judge has to go through. It's enough to bring on gout. Now then, did Upward confess to doing this? Or has a witness come forth saying he did it to the Bragg boy? Did Upward confess to owning the blue bottle you purloined?
What's purloined, sir? That's a new one.
Stole, filched, nipped, snatched, swiped.
No, he don't even know I snatched it.
Now, let's see. Is there now a witness saying someone in there who wasn't King Bragg pumped lead into the deceased and with King Bragg's revolver?
Nope, not yet.
So there's no evidence for this baroque theory of yours?
It ain't broke yet, sir, but it's sway backed some.
Sway backed law. Now that's a corker. Pickens, you're a master of sway backed law. Now, so far, there's not a shred of evidence, not a scintilla.
A what?
Oh, never mind. You think this is enough to stay the execution?
That's what I'm thinking.
You taking a pity in that little fort?
He ain't little at all, sir. Maybe it's because he's in his father's shadow he seems little.
Speaking of his family, Sheriff, first of all, this punk wanders around doubtful with his shiny new six-gun looking for folks to plant in the local cemetery. Then he exterminates three gents from the rival outfit. Then when we finally convict him with a proper trial, what happens? His old man shoots you in the outhouse and stages a mock hanging so that you get the message. If the twerp dies, so do you. And then this Admiral Bragg and his nefarious daughter Queen show up in your jail with enough hardware under their cloth to start a Cuban revolution. Then they take me to lunch, and she's got a revolver aimed at my crotch, and they're planning on kidnapping me so they have a hostage they can trade for the twerp. Only you wandered in and foiled their plot. Then his daughter starts working on you using wiles and charms. Don't sit there blushing, Pickens. I got eyes. If they can't spring the twerp one way, they'll try another. She's got no shame, and Admiral Bragg's got no shame, and they're playing you for a sucker.
Well, she took me to some graves on the T-bar I'm going to look at, sir.
Here's what you do. Read the territorial code. Get someone to help you with the big words. Now get that blue bottle back to Upward and apologize to him for poking around in there and get yourself ready for a hanging because that's what's going to happen in a little while. You understand, Sheriff?
I guess you ain't going to postpone it any.
No! And if you pester me again, I'll probably speed it up.
I escaped from there. Them fumes was giving me a headache. It sure was nice outside where the air was fresh. That reminded me. I hadn't looked in on Critter for a few days, and I'd better get over there before he had a fit. Critter was in his stall at Turk's livery barn, just like always. When he seen me coming, he kicked the gate. Then he did it again, splintering the planks some, by way of greeting me. I guess you've been missing me. He kicked the side of the stall. Then he kicked again, just to make the point. I guess I better back you out before you kill me. I wasn't going in there when he was feeling a little unhappy. So I opened the stall gate, expecting him to pile out of there. But he just stood there, his ears laid back, his head turned just enough to keep an eye on me. I knew what he wanted. He wanted me to slide in beside him so he could kill me. If you don't want to come out, I'll just shut the gate on you. He hammered both walls with his hooves and then reared up and piled his front hooves into the head of the stall for good measure. That brought Turk.
Judas Priest! Give me a new barn when it's over!
He's a friendly nag. He just takes it personal when he's penned up.
I'll take him somewhere else.
Critter, your dog food. Critter backed out quietly. It takes some persuading.
That horse should be shot. You owe me.
Turk stared, itching to get his knife and slit Critter's throat, but then he wheeled away. Critter, you got to stop annoying people. Critter licked his chops and waited, while I brushed him down and threw a blanket and saddle on him and bridled him up. I took Critter up Wyoming Street, and he was so happy he was prancing along. But then Sammy Upward came bounding out, and I reined up.
Hey! Hey! You leaving?
Just for some air. This town's tight as a drum.
Well, I got a prowler.
A prowler? Something get took?
Well, maybe.
What are you missing?
Just some stuff. Ain't nothing to worry you about, but if you see anyone poking around my bar, you'll let me know quick, right?
Well, you're missing something, Sammy. I got to know what it is and what it's worth.
I'm not missing a damn thing. I just got some suspicions is all.
I can't look for something I don't know what it is or why it was took.
Forget it! It was just some loose bar stuff.
Well, I'll keep an eye out for loose bar stuff, Sammy.
Oh, I shouldn't even bothered. It was nothing.
Upward ducked inside. Now that was sure saying something to me. He wasn't owning up to what was missing. And that was real interesting to me. Well, Critter, that was like a confession. Sammy should have just kept his trap shut, but he didn't think of that. Critter, he just headed for the open country up the road. Well, me and Critter loped up the valley a mile or so, and I was just thinking about turning back, when up ahead, coming over the brow of a hill, was a mess of horsemen like an army of beetles. 20, 30, maybe even more. And they wasn't in a hurry, just walking quietly toward me. Now that made me real curious, so I just reined in Critter and let that bunch approach me. By the time they got within shouting distance, I knew what that crowd was. It was the whole damned Anchor Ranch on the move. It sure smelled like trouble. Sure enough, there was Admiral Bragg on that blooded horse of his leading the bunch, and next to him that Queen, riding astride shamelessly. And first thing I noticed was that every man jack of them was armed to the teeth. Admiral, he had a matched pair of sidearms. Behind him came an army, including Big Nose George, wearing a sidearm and carrying a longer one. Next to him was Alvin Ream, with a bandolier over his shoulder and a pair of irons hanging from his hips. And sure enough, there was Smiley Thistlewaite and his pal Spittin' Sam, the pair of them looking like they was ready for trouble. There was a bunch more behind them, mostly riders for the brand, some of them well outfitted with one or two irons. I didn't know what to make of this march upon Doubtful, but I knew who I was and what I am. I'm a peace officer, and this bunch looked like an army. I sat Critter, who laid back his ears and waited to bite and kick all them animals coming his way. I might have enjoyed that. Most of them were blooded horses, because Admiral Bragg liked good horse flesh. Me? I like whatever thrives, and I don't much care how the beast looks. So I sat there and waited, and before long, Bragg pulled up and Queen beside him.
Afternoon, Sheriff.
You wouldn't be heading for Doubtful, would you?
Free country.
We're not gonna have any fights in Doubtful.
We've come to say goodbye to my boy.
You're welcome to do that, but not with weapons. There's going to be no weapons on anyone day after tomorrow.
Is there a law against it?
Disturbing the peace.
Peace? You call the day when they break my boy's neck the peace?
I saw how Queen was sort of hiding her hands in all them hiked-up skirts she was wearing for a change. I thought she'd shoot a sheriff if it came to that. Miss Queen, you'll want to put your hands in plain sight. I get plumb itchy. She didn't move a muscle, and it wasn't hard to figure where that muzzle under there was pointing. Miss Queen, you just smile now, and I'll smile back. She didn't smile none. I decided to make up some rules as I went along. There's gonna be no weapons at the hanging. Neither you nor any of Crayfish Ruble's bunch neither. We'll see to it. You're gonna leave all your arms at the sampling room, and the T-bar men are gonna leave all theirs at the Last Chance Saloon. That's what you can expect. We're going to see to it that justice is done proper by the territory of Wyoming. All right. Anyone wearing arms, both sides, that day is going to get tossed into my pen. And you'll stay there for a while.
You done, Sheriff?
For the moment. All them riders whirled by me, with little glances my way, and a few little gestures, and a few smirks. And then me and Critter were standing in the lonely road, watching that army head for Doubtful. It sure was tempting to run ahead of that bunch and try to stop the bloodbath when they rode into Doubtful. There'd be two gangs, one in favor of the hanging and one against it, and ready to kill one another and maybe half the town in the process. It sure looked like real bad business. But then I sort of took stock. They weren't there to fight each other. The Braggs, they were there in sorrow and grief. The T-Bar bunch was there to see justice done. They would probably settle down for the long wait, while the sands of time ran out for the Bragg boy, and then they'd just pack up and leave. I hoped so, anyway. There was something else on my mind. Now that both outfits were going to be in town, I had the whole countryside pretty much to myself. I had a little business out there, on Crayfish Ruble's range. Queen had showed me some graves in a side gully of a nameless gulch, and it was time to find out what that was about. But that ranch was a long piece away. Critter? You good for a run? He chewed on his bit. That meant he was bored, and a run would make life real interesting in the day of a horse. All right, then. We're going on a round trip to hell. Boom! Well, he took off so fast he almost pitched me out of my saddle. But I got upright again and reined him a little. He steadied into a rocking chair lope, so easy it was like walking for any two-legged critters. We kept at it. Through country so big it was beyond the imagination of folks living cramped lives back east. Here was land as far as the eye could see, land without a building on it. Land enough for everyone. The West was land. Lots of land. Land for the poor, the people starting out, the helpless, the brave, and everything in between. The trouble came when some fellers with a lot of self-importance wanted all the land and then some and began pushing others out. Those fellers wanted the best valleys, the best water, the biggest ranch house, and a private army besides, just so they could be the biggest rooster. Admiral Bragg was like that. Crayfish Ruble had different goals. He wanted to get rich and get out. He wanted to run cows until there was no grass, make his pile, and head for the biggest town. If he left the land that was gnawed down to dirt, that didn't bother him none, so long as he got the last dime he could get out of the place. Neither of them fellas was the sort to admire in my book. Bragg had tried to scare or push me into letting loose of his boy, and that didn't sit well with me. But this trip, I was going to look at Ruble's place, because there was something real bad going on, and I sure wanted to find out what, and whether it had some connection to this hanging that was coming up.
We ain't done yet. Cotton Pickens continues on the next CD.